Hey, everybody, everybody, everybody. Hey, everybody, everybody, everybody. Welcome to episode 4 of the Recruiting Nerd Podcast. My name is Will. I'm so glad that you are here. Today, I have an awesome guest, one Mr. Tim Sackett. Tim is the author of a book called The Talent Fix, which I would recommend to all of you. It really is all about talent acquisition and recruiting and challenging some of the norms. So please check it out. But without further ado, here is my conversation with Tim. I hope you enjoy. Much love. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. Going well. Hey, thanks for joining. Really appreciate it. Strange times we are living in, my friend. Strange times. So wanted to chat with you a little bit, talk about what's going on in our industry and kind of take it from there. So let's talk about the pandemic, because we certainly don't hear about that enough. But what are some of the biggest changes that you've seen from a recruiting perspective, or some of the biggest impacts that you've seen when it comes to recruiting during a pandemic?
Well, I think we have our recruiting teams are kind of out remote now. I mean, recently in the last couple of weeks, you've seen the rise of recruiter openings happening. And I think everyone's kind of trying to figure out why that is. And part of it's just simple. It's twofold. One of it's like, hey, we got new budgets for 2022. So everyone's like, hey, in the new budget, I'm able to hire some more recruiters to help me fill all these openings. We also know we've been losing a ton of recruiters just through kind of churn with all the great kind of reshuffling type stuff that's happening. It's crazy. Like, you and I have talked like offline about this, but the amount of money that a recruiter can make right now, even like a below average recruiter, is a little insane. At some point, someone's going to come and say, wait a minute, we're paying you a lot for not much. But in the meantime, hey, if you're a crappy recruiter, go get yours.
Yeah, definitely. We've seen a lot of that. I am constantly surprised, and I'm trying not to be the bitter old man who's, jealous of these 25 and 26 year olds making all this money, and thinking to myself, like, you know how hard I had to work to get where I'm at?
You know, back in the day.
Yeah, I try not to be that guy, but you're right.
You and I have both been through like kind of major economic downturns and stuff like this. It's great. Go get your money, get it while you can. Understand as well when the openings aren't there or when they have to cut back on the team. It's usually done in two ways. Obviously, your best performers you're going to keep. And then you go, the person who's making the most money who's not performing is the first one that's going to get cut. And so it's great. Get your money. But also understand, like, you better be the top performer or one of the top performers. And that's not by you feeling you are, but actually measurable results. Otherwise, you're going to get cut loose.
Definitely. So from a candidate's perspective, there's obviously all this talk about hybrid work and remote work and the impact that has in attracting talent. So what are some of the themes that you are seeing?
You know, I think when we take a look at one of the things that, I mean, both like our organizations will struggle with in the coming future. I mean, we already are right now, which is this kind of onboarding and training new hires. If we have to do it remotely, can it be done in a crisis? Yep. Do we do it well? No, we just don't. And I don't think anyone really, I haven't talked to anybody, and that's across the world, that says, unless they've always been remote, they were remote first work to begin with, and that's all they've done. And they will say they've onboarded really well. But the reality is, I don't think they even know either. This is just what we do to onboard. But when you talk to people who were hired and then started and trained and working remotely and have never been in the office at all, comparable to that's where they were prior, they will tell you like their engagement level, the tie they have to the organization, all of that stuff just isn't there. Now, are they satisfied with their balance? Yeah. Are they satisfied with their work life? They could be, but they also don't really have any loyalty or pull to stay with that organization, which again, kind of puts us in the situation we are right now with everybody just kind of churning away and going from job to job.
Yeah. I hear a lot and see a lot of articles about people saying, I'd rather quit than go back into the office, which I think is insanity.
It's a little BS too, right? It's like a little posturing, because right now they know they can probably find another remote job, but it won't be that way forever, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Don't you think people, what they want really, though, isn't necessarily remote. There's a percent of the population that want to work remote, and they are vocal as hell. But I think people just want flexibility. They want to be treated like an adult. You and I both have kids. Like, if my kid's sick and I don't have meetings until 2 p.m, I'm just going to work from home until my wife will go into work or whatever, and then she'll come back in the afternoon. And, like, just give me the flexibility to manage my day the way I need to. I'm an adult, and I'm going to get the work done I need. If we did that, I think most people are like, cool, you know.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I personally need to go into the office. I think social capital is a real thing. I think it's a real thing and very beneficial. Helps me lock in. And you can't underestimate the positive power of relationships in your organization.
Yeah.
It's a really big deal. So
I was on a roundtable call yesterday with a bunch of like executive types. And one of the ladies, pro remote, she was like, well, all the research and all the studies say like productivity is way higher because everyone's remote. And I'm like, slow down. My entire team went remote at the heart of the pandemic. And we had people that thrived. They did better than when they were in the office. By the way, they were already high performers. And then I had some kind of middling, kind of average performers who struggled when they went remote. Like they had a really hard time staying on task, staying directed. We have great measures. Like we know exactly what's being done, not being done. And if we didn't have them come back to the office, there was a good chance they were going to have to get let go. They could not do it remotely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of measures, what kind of things do you look at when measuring recruiter performance? Because I know that some of the traditional metrics that people look at maybe are not indicative of true recruiter performance.
Yeah. In my book, I kind of slammed some of those traditional kind of recruiting metrics that we use. Like the one that I love to just hammer on is like hiring manager satisfaction. So you're telling me because a hiring manager is like super satisfied with a recruiter, that correlates to a recruiter doing a good job. There's very little correlation to that. And what we find is that hiring manager sat usually is elevated based on the relationship or personality of the recruiter, regardless if the recruiter is actually doing a good job. And like, we'll see somebody going, oh, I'm super satisfied with Tim. Like, I'm going to give him 8 out of 10. And then like, oh my gosh, Tim must be really filling your jobs quickly and with great quality of talent. No. You're like, wait a minute. Then why are you satisfied? And they're like, oh, I just love Tim. We talk about Michigan State stuff. He's a great guy. And I know he's trying hard, but you know, he hasn't really filled any openings yet. And you're just like, oh my gosh. Days to fill is another one that has zero correlation to success in TA. You're like, oh, because we feel stuff, fill positions faster, that must be better. Well, not necessarily. What if you're filling so fast that you're actually reducing your quality? Again, there's so many pieces, but people go, for lack of any other thing, anything else, then here's the stats that we're going to deliver. To me, I love to do funnel, kind of simple sales, recruiting funnel stats, because I think as a leader in TA, this helps me have a conversation with my executive team about expectations and capacity. If I know it takes me 100 candidates to get that we have to source from marketing and advertising, all of this. And then from there, we're going to find 15 that we want to screen. And from the screen, we're going to get 5 that we actually want to invite into interview. And from those interviews, we're going to get 1 higher. I can then take those numbers as we get more data, right, on the averages and go, hey, here's the exact capacity of my team and what we can fill. And so when my executive comes and says, guess what? In the third quarter of this year, we're going to increase our hiring by 25%. And you can go, no, we're not. Because we're at full capacity right now. And there's actually no way we can make that happen with the current structure and in resources that we have. But if you want to do that, then here's how we can actually do that. And here's what we're going to need to do. What I find is a lot of TA leaders will go, okay, yeah, we'll work harder. And I'm like, harder is not a strategy.
Right.
It's not a sustainable strategy. We had an executive and I was working with a TA team and the executive came in and said, we're going to have to increase our hires by 500 a month. They kind of go, okay. And I'm in the room as the consultant. I go, that's not going to happen. And like the CEO was like, you need to explain yourself, you know, and it was like all up in arms. And I'm like, I just ran through the numbers. And I'm like, that you could actually have this TA team come in here, work 24/7, 365, and they would still fail to meet what you're asking them to do. And then like afterwards, he pulls me aside. He's like, no one's ever explained that to me. They just said, okay, we'll get it done. And then it fails and it fails and it fails. And this is basically a corporation that had went through 5 TA leaders in 5 years because they kept selling the same stuff. Oh, we'll work harder, fail. Okay, new one coming in. We'll work harder, fail. So I really think we have to have hard measures on our recruiters that says, and again, this is for recruiters kind of like, oh, you're micromanaging me. But no, we're not micromanaging me. We're actually protecting you. We're going to say, hey, this is a fair amount of work that should be done. And if you do this work, thank you so much. Like, that's awesome. Come back again tomorrow and do the same kind of work. But also it's going to allow me as a TA leader to go out and get you the resources and tools you need to be successful. And ultimately, that's what you want from your team. That's what I want from my team. I want them to be successful. I don't want them to fail.
Absolutely. And that probably
Can you tell I'm passionate, Will, about this?
Yes. Like, yes. Well, it probably ties back into that whole hiring manager satisfaction thing too, right?
Yeah.
Where when TA teams just say, yeah, we'll do it. We'll get it done. Don't worry about it. They're driving for satisfaction, for popularity. They're telling the hiring manager what they want to hear, but they're not telling them reality. It's one of the pitfalls I see a lot of HR organizations run into, where they feel like they need to acquiesce to everything the hiring manager says versus challenging ideas and consulting and recommending solutions. They just say, okay.
There's a great whiteboard exercise I love to do with a recruiter and a hiring manager. We take the hiring manager and their team. We said, hey, come bring your team in. And I mean, again, most teams with a hiring manager are probably what? Anywhere from 5 to 20, depending on the size of your organization, whatever that might be. And we bring them into a conference room and we tell them, like, it's going to be a half hour meeting. Let's say, Will, you're my recruiter. I'm Tim, the consultant. We come in with a hiring manager and their team. And the first thing I'm going to say is, Will died today. It's really bad. Sorry. You have no recruiter. Okay, how are we going to fill your job? Let's brainstorm it right now and start putting all these ideas up on the whiteboard. And at the end of the day, I'm like, so the concept is, think about if you did not have a recruiter right now, how would you fill your opening as a leader, as a team? They come up with 25 different things. They start bringing out names of people. They get their phones out, their laptops. They're on their LinkedIn. They're on their networks on Facebook. And all of a sudden, the recruiter's like, has all these names. And I said, because this is how a team and a hiring manager should work with a recruiter. It's not a recruiter going, oh, I'll keep giving. It's no, we as an organization have to recruit, and this is what it looks like. So there's so many of these kind of like the light bulb comes on where they're like, oh, and you're like, yeah, you as a hiring manager leader, your sole job is to increase the talent of your team. That's your job. It's the only job you have. And they don't think that way, right? They think their job is, oh, I run accounting, I run payables, or I do whatever. And you're like, no. You have people that do that. Your job's to increase their talent by training, by motivation, by hiring better people. That is your job as a leader. And then they're like, oh, shit. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that'd be a great exercise, actually. So
it works. Oh, it works good. So like well. It. Yeah, it works great.
Probably really eye-opening for a lot of those teams, too, I have to imagine.
Well, and I think it shows them how they can actually work with a recruiter, because then what it does is free the recruiter up to really be a hunter and not a farmer. It really frees them up to go after some people and create relationships and find better talent instead of finding just who's available.
Right. Yeah, we were talking about salaries a little bit earlier as it relates to recruiters, but we're seeing the same thing with candidates
in
all disciplines. I have never seen so many counteroffers in my life. So when it comes to negotiating or working with offers, any advice you'd give to, say, a young recruiter trying to navigate their way through these things?
You know, there's a concept called bumpers in sales. It's really kind of getting a person nailed in to what they're comfortable with, understanding like stuff changes really fast, but that should be the outlier. The outlier is the person that comes in that says, you know, as a recruiter, you're like, okay, what are you making now? And what do we need for this position? And all of a sudden they come in and it's 25,000 more than they told you. That shouldn't happen very often. That should be like a really rare occurrence. And the concept of bumpers is, okay, hey, like we're super interested after screening them and there's interest there. You can tell there's interest as a recruiter. What's it going to take? And they go, okay, well, it's going to be 70,000. And you're like, oh, okay, that's at the top of a range. Like, I don't know if we can get that. I know I can get 67. Could you do 67? Like, yeah, I'm so interested in working for your company in this position. Like 67 will work. You know, I want 70. And you're at what? And you're like, I'm at 57. You're just going through this whole kind of negotiation. And your hope is as a recruiter that you're bringing somebody in that you know can fit, but you've actually kind of given some top and bottom of where this person is and kind of where that's going to be. And usually that works out. I mean, 60% of the time it works every time kind of thing, right? Like, I don't, it should work out if you do a pretty good job, you know, kind of throwing those bumpers in there.
Yeah, setting those expectations up front, right? That's,
yeah,
it's really a big thing.
The, as a recruiter for me, the most embarrassing thing that would ever happen is when a hiring manager would ask me a question that I should have the answer for. And you're not going to have every answer. The common one is the person left a job in June, didn't start another job until like September. And the hiring manager goes, well, why did they leave that job? Why was there this gap of 2 months? And you're like, oh, I didn't ask. And now I feel like a complete idiot. I should have asked. I should look at a resume, a profile on a person and be able to anticipate every question that a hiring manager is going to ask. And salary is one of those. What are they making now? What do they need, you know, to take this job? And so we have to nail that one.
Got it. Do you have dedicated sourcers on your team or is it?
Nope. We just recruiters that do their own sourcing. We've messed around, I mean, many of times over the last decade with sourcers. And what we found was it was always a difficult, there's no clean way where it should break. And when I talk to organizations that are using sourcers and recruiters, everyone does it a little bit differently. It's like, okay, well, our sourcers only find candidates and then it's up to the recruiter to gain interest and do all this. Or our sourcers do everything to the point of they get a person who's interested, then they pass it on to the recruiter, who then is supposed to build the relationship and determine if the person's a good fit and all of this stuff. So that break of work, if you take a look at all the work a recruiter has to do, dividing that from a sourcer to recruiter becomes one of the most difficult things because you're like, what do you compensate then for? What's the harder piece of it? And that changes, right? There's certain times like right now, if you're a sourcer, super difficult job. If it's higher unemployment, well, being a sourcer is a super easy job. So you're constantly have this ebb and flow of how do we compensate a sourcer or a recruiter based on how difficult the work is. If I'm a recruiter and I have a sourcer who's just funneling me interested people all day long, I'm like, what? I have a great job. Like, this is the easiest job in the world. You mean my job is to talk somebody into wanting to come work here who already wants to come work here? Okay.
Right. Right.
So I think there's a part of that where you go, there has to be some kind of like salary plus bonus scenario, right? That rewards each side for the difficulty of work that they're in and the time. Do I have that answer? I do not, because every organization seems to be a little bit different. I wish I had like that. This is the exact way it works best. Everyone's found out a way to make it work.
Yeah, it is a challenge. I think the handoff and when that happens can be a challenge. Like,
yes,
you can define it. And you can say, all right, for everything, this is the handoff, but making it not clunky or awkward or weird is hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
And both sides have to be bought in, right? The sourcer and the recruiter have to have a great relationship and trust. And what I find is usually they don't. Like the sourcer is like, I keep handing off great talent to the recruiter and they keep effing it up. Or the recruiter's like, they keep giving me crappy people. That relationship is so undersold and how important it is to be successful that those two people literally are splitting a job and they should be tied at the hip and best friends. Like, that's the only way that works really well. And I think we as TA leaders sometimes miss that and we don't create the environment for that to be a great relationship. Like, they should be best friends at work. That's the kind of concept relationship I want between my sourcer and my recruiter.
Yeah, take them out for beers, make them hang out with each other.
Right? Yeah.
Golf course, whatever it takes.
Hug it out. Let's go. Yep,
exactly. Oh, I forgot you're a professional hugger and a hugging consultant. Totally forgot about that.
Yeah. Before me too. That was all before me too.
No, that's great. So how long has your book been out now? 2-3 years?
Yeah. It's been probably third year. I mean, clearly, like first year it drops, you have a, you know, it's strong here because it's brand new stuff. Man, it has legs. It keeps going, keeps being, you know, like Sherm is the publisher, which is, I mean, they've been awesome to work with. And it's been one of their top three selling books the last 3 years. And really for them, that was unique because it's not an HR book. It's a complete talent acquisition book. And that was one of the first ones that they had. And they had come to me specifically saying, hey, we want to increase our content around recruiting. You know, are you willing to write a book? So they had no idea how it would sell. And it's been really great. And for me, that hearing people from all over the world reach out, when I get a call or a picture from somebody like on LinkedIn and they're like in Norway with a copy of my book, I'm always just like, wow, that's crazy. Yeah,
that's amazing. Oh, that's really cool. I happen to have a signed copy myself. So I'm one of the lucky ones. Yeah, I was going to ask what the motivation was behind the book. And so they came to you and said, hey, can you put something together?
Yeah. And they really were like, we just know that. And this was, if you think about, well, probably when they asked me was like 5 years ago, but it was post Great Recession. Hiring was starting to get really difficult. And they were getting more and more kind of demand from the SHRM membership around like, hey, we need recruiting stuff. Help us be better at recruiting. Our organizations need more. And I've been writing on my blog every day for the last 12 years. And I was getting every single day getting multiple messages from people asking, I'm new in TA role and here's what we're trying to do. Do you have any suggestions or do you have any help or what ATS should I use or what this and that? And at a point I go, you know, I'm just going to write it. Here's exactly what I would do if I came in and ran TA in your organization. Here it is. I started the chapter where I think, you know, I started is where I say, when I interview for the TA job is how you set yourself up for success. That's where it starts. You go through every kind of segment of what would happen and what I would do. And so I'm like, great. Now when people ask me a question, I can go, oh, I wrote a book. Can you just go buy the book? Turns out people don't want to read a book. They just don't want to ask me the question. But, you know, it's still nice to have the book out there.
Right. In case you forget, as you advance in age, you have something to refer back to. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Again, I'll get a picture from somebody and they'll have literally like 250 sticky notes in the book. And you're like, oh, cool. Like someone's, you know, actually like digging in and taking the ideas. So it's awesome.
You're into it. Yeah, that's great. I think continuous education as a recruiter is really important too. And it definitely, in my opinion, it suffered once everything went virtual.
Yep.
It really has. It's been tough. Virtual conferences don't do it for me. I'm not going to lie. It's really...
No, I agree with you. Yeah.
It's really hard.
You know, I find the content is basically the same, right? Like I've done 100 virtual conferences now. And the content I would deliver in a virtual conference is exactly the same content I would deliver live. Difference being is that lack of interaction. Because when you're doing a virtual conference, you're basically just talking at them for an hour or a half hour or whatever the time frame is going to be. And then you might have some Q&A at the end, but people go, well, isn't that the same way live? And you're like, well, no, because you see the reaction. And if I say something and there's like a oh moment or someone's like, ooh, wow, you can actually kind of expand and go further or somebody, or you see that like when the dog, like you talk to a dog and they turn their head sideways, you're getting that look from the audience. Like, I don't understand what you're saying. You can dig in more. Virtually, you don't have that ability, right?
No, it feels like you're sitting in a room talking to yourself.
Yeah.
It really does. It's weird. Yeah. It's really weird. Yeah, but I think you're right about the content. I was talking to the editor of ERE last week.
Yeah.
And he was telling me that he wanted content that was unique because everybody talks about diversity and diversity is good. And here's what you can expect if you get diversity. And you should have a good candidate experience because candidate experience is good and no more likely to take your job. And just like these really rudimentary rehash things over and over again. So content is,
you know, the sports radio guy, Jim Rome, and he has a TV show, I think too now. Right.
Yeah.
And his website is Have a Take. And like, you know, forever when I would hear it, I thought it was Habitat. And it was like, no, have a take, have an opinion on something and then actually spout it. Your opinion that candidate experience is good or diversity is good, that's a crappy take. Have a better take. We assume it's good. I had somebody the other day go, well, Tim, do you believe there's systematic racism? And I'm like, yeah. Are you looking for me to say no? And then we have like some like back ass 1930s conversation. Like what?
Yeah. Yeah. I think on his radio show, he says, have a take, don't suck. I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is what he says. And, yeah, for sure. That's cool. So if somebody wants to check out your book, where can they find it?
Amazon, The Talent Fix. SHRM has it on their website as well. But it's probably, you know, most of us just go to Amazon, right, and get that. So
yeah, these days I get everything from Amazon or Instacart. I literally don't need to leave my house ever. but that's not good for me. So I make sure to get out.
I still haven't done Uber Eats, partly because I live in Lansing, Michigan, which they have, but like I live in like a suburb outside of Lansing and I don't even know if they have it, but I hear people like my son lives in New York City and he does like Uber Eats. It seems like daily. You're just kind of like, seems nice, but I actually enjoy getting out of the house.
Right. Right. It's good for your mental health. Well, thanks for taking some time to spend with me. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And hope we can chat again here real soon.
That will do it for today. I want to thank Tim for his time. If you want to check out his daily blog or his book, I will put links in the episode notes. As always, there are a few ways you can help me out. Please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Visit me on therecruitingnerd.com. And send me some feedback. Again, I'm looking for insight, ideas for topics, guests, whatever else you think may be a great addition to the show. So thank you so much. Have a great day. And as always, much love.